You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis, and you very well may have soccer on the brain these days, what with the World Cup in high gear and Qatar. So consider this a spoiler alert in case you DVR'd today's do-or-die match between the United States and Iran.
Austin McKay, Des making a big run. It's meant for him. Des is snuck in behind. Des into the middle. Pulisic scores! The U.S. takes the lead!
And the U.S. went on to win against Iran 1-0, meaning they will play another day. Here in Los Angeles, of course, there are three professional soccer teams, two men's, one women's, and also a long and storied history of amateur soccer. And today, let's listen back to that history, going back to the 80s and 90s.
Come on, get out! Get out!
That's when a team in the L.A. Municipal Soccer League became a local legend. The team won games, they got into fights, they broke limbs. They were called Hollywood United. And if you looked closely, you might have noticed one or two players were active British rock musicians of the day, or movie actors, even Milli Vanilli. Can you believe it? But the core of the team were just regular blokes who came from the U.K. and found themselves here in L.A., and like a lot of immigrants here, they bonded over their love of the game. KCRW's Bob Carlson, host of the Unfictional podcast, brings us their story. It's part of a series called Football Confidential that we're airing this month as we celebrate the World Cup.
At one time in his life, Hilton Goring was trying to juggle a job as a crew member in Hollywood, while at the same time playing semi-pro soccer all over the American Southwest.
You know, I managed to have a couple of times when I was on a film working as a camera assistant, but I'd have a game Friday night in Phoenix and I'd have to talk to my boss and say, can I get the time off? Which was very easy if they were European. But the second I had a boss that was American, he would just question, but what, for soccer?
Eventually, Hilton found a team that didn't require him to leave town. And this is about that team. They were a legendary and notorious local amateur team known for an aggressive style, colorful banter, and for fielding the occasional movie star or rock musician. They were called Hollywood United, a team made up mostly of expatriate Brits.
Yeah, I was born in London. The environment was always football, as long as I can think back. You know, as a kid, I was with what they would call now Crystal Palace's academy.
Crystal Palace is a team in the top division of English football.
I was a good semi-professional, I would say. And then my life kind of split. My parents moved to America, so I had a green card. I moved to America and definitely to Los Angeles to pursue a career in the film industry. And I was working as a camera assistant.
And on the side, sometimes Hilton would audition as an extra, like if a commercial needed some guys who knew how to play soccer. He was at a casting session like that.
I didn't get in for whatever reason, but at the end of it, I met all these other English guys. And once they saw me play, I was chatting with them and they were like, hey, we've got a team. They said, just come down. So once I came down, I got this immediate sense of, all right, this is home.
How are you? Look at us. All got great beards.
A while back, we went and sat down at a table at the original farmer's market with some of the guys that Hilton played with on Hollywood United beginning well back in the 90s. It was the first time that some of them had even seen each other for a long time, and now they fell back into banter like they were in the pub after a game.
Stuart Rickwood, number 6, defender.
Brendan Burke, midfielder, number 17.
Hilton Goring, number 14 most of the time. Utility player.
So when is the last time you guys played?
We played against each other.
Yeah, that's right. We played against each other.
Probably 5 years ago.
I play in an over 58 team. He's retired, right? Your back went.
Well, my back went, actually. I was forced to retire, yeah.
I was actually man of the match last Sunday.
Sorry about that. What's that?
My back has gone.
Hollywood United played in the Los Angeles Municipal Soccer League, which is really its own fascinating story. It's one of the oldest city leagues in the country, formed in 1902.
Our home fields were either Griffith Park, or we played where the 134 and the 5 meet. So there was nothing fancy. It was municipal parks.
They would re-turf them every couple of years, and they'd be good for like 2 games.
Yeah.
And then everything would just be dust.
Dust. No, you're right, because you can't play in the rain.
5 minutes.
So if you did that in England, you never play.
The LA Municipal League teams were often based around the player's country of origin.
Such a multicultural layout of teams. It was incredible. I'd never played against Armenians, or I'd never played against Guatemalans.
There'd be Korean teams, there'd be...
Belize.
Jamaican teams.
Nigerians.
We got labelled as the English team, so everyone would turn up when they play against us.
Gilbert Montoya, midfielder, number 13. I think I was one of the first non-British players to play for Hollywood United. When I remember playing against you guys, there was always that element of, oh, it's the Hollywood United, it's the British guys, man. They can be mean, watch your feet.
You know, the main structure of the team were, you know, as you would say, regular guys. There was, of course, being in LA, a lot of people in the film industry. Mainly crew members. Then we would have some famous faces turn up occasionally.
There was a handful of actors, musicians, and celebrities, mostly British, who would play with Hollywood United from time to time, like Steve Jones, guitarist from the Sex Pistols, or Ian Astbury from the 80s and 90s hard rock band The Cult.
They'd say, oh, that's Ian. And you wouldn't know because he just was there to play football. He wasn't, you know, flash in any way. He just came, played his game, and went home.
A Sex Pistol in the team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, someone from Def Leppard,
The Cult. The Alarm, Robbie Williams.
Yeah, so we had all of these. Like,
the actors wanted to be footballers,
yeah.
And we wanted to be actors.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the most famous actors was Vinnie Jones, the English footballer who was a tough guy in British action films. He would turn up on talk shows or at events wearing Hollywood United gear or talking about the team.
When Vinnie Jones turned up, it just developed a different attention to the team. And then we could go to a sports company and say, look, we need some kits.
But even though they started to get famous as a team of celebrities, on the field, Hollywood United was all about the game.
Anyone who came, they just came to play football. They didn't come and show what their bank balance was. And if you couldn't pass a ball straight, you'd get told about it, no matter who you are.
I remember we used to have a kick around there, and that's, I remember there was Billy Duffy was there.
He's also from the band The Cult.
There was Billy Duffy and Millie Vanilli. This is dating us a bit.
Oh, yeah.
They got a Grammy taken away from them because they were lip syncing, right? And so they showed up to play football one day. And so both from Germany, so they were actually good players. And there was one of them, though, was just like hogged the ball, wouldn't pass or anything. Dribble. I remember one time that he's running through doing his dribbling, and Billy Duffy's like, Shan, give me more. And he didn't give it to Duffy, and he goes, you can't fucking pass, and you can't fucking sing either. And it was just this choir. It was just like,
before the internet, before social media, Hollywood United made a name for themselves just by reputation.
We would pack the school down there with people, just like, oh, Hollywood's playing, let's go watch him. Not only was it football, so a lot of people there for the love of the game, but also very entertaining.
Had we had the internet and social media access, we could have been selling merch like crazy.
Oh,
I know that Hollywood United shirts, we could have been selling those by the...
No matter what kind of careers the individual players were pursuing during the week, on the weekends, they played to win. There were hard fouls and fist fights. The police were occasionally called.
And we always were very competitive, a little bit of aggro on the field. And I remember we were in our 40s at some stage, and it felt like at 40, which in hindsight, I wish I was 40 now, but it felt like we were taking it a little too seriously. But such was the competitiveness to win.
Like, I broke my leg. Just a through ball, me and the goalie, I tapped it past him and he caught my leg. And that was often the issue that you had, was like, how hard do you play? Because you got to get up for work the next day. And there was many times you go to work with a little bit of a limp.
While Hilton was on the sideline nursing his broken leg, he used the opportunity to take video.
I've noticed this after the fact, that when you're playing football, you are completely in the present. You know, it's because you're worried about the ball and someone knocking you over or you're going to get injured. So you're not thinking about anything else.
And
for that 90 minutes, you're like stress-free, worry-free.
Therapy. Yeah.
It really is therapy. And when I'd leave the game, I'd go into the game with the world is on my shoulders. And once the game was over, it was like, and everything's great. Now, the next morning I wake up, it all goes back again. But for that afternoon and that day, it was just like this sense of everything got lifted.
We had one season. We had an invincible season, as you call it. But we went unbeaten all season. And I think that that was the strongest team effort because we were proud of it.
And I remember I still have the T-shirt at home. It's got undefeated and it lists all the fixtures underneath it.
And it just sort of slowly faded out because I think partly our age. You know, we aged out. And I think as well, people's responsibilities in life kind of took over.
But for Hilton and his former teammates, the thing they miss isn't just playing the games.
But then when we get to the game, all the lads getting together and the sense of banter, which at the time I really took for granted. And now in hindsight, not having that, I feel like there's a big gap in my life of that community of like the lads.
Yeah. I always say that the British are so much more clannish out of the country. So I think we definitely drifted towards each other.
You're in the change room afterwards, couple of beers, all the lads together. You know, that's what probably everybody misses, even when you're pro or whatever level.
Just to have the same banter, to have the same issues in life. So we had a lot of common bonds.
The Hollywood United organization still exists, fielding teams at several age levels, holding charity events, and competing as part of the U.S. Adult Soccer Organization. For KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson.
And by the way, you can listen to all of the L.A. soccer stories from the series Football Confidential at kcrw.com/unfictional. This is Greater L.A. from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. And to the excitement of election night we go. When you've campaigned to run L.A. County's second largest city and won.
Thank you, Long Beach! This is a night for the history books.
That's Rex Richardson, who in just a couple of weeks will be sworn in as the first black mayor ever elected in Long Beach. Richardson came to California when he was 11 years old and grew up with a single mom. He went on to become student body president at Cal State Dominguez Hills before becoming a labor organizer and the youngest person ever elected to the Long Beach City Council. As a two-term council member and vice mayor, Richardson represented mostly working-class northern Long Beach. Now he will represent and lead the entire city of nearly 500,000 people again, the second largest city in L.A. County, and Rex Richardson joins us right now. Mr. Mayor-elect, thank you and congratulations.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Happy to join you.
You were quoted in the LA Times saying that Long Beach is special because it's a place where you came up as a young man and you broke age and racial barriers in politics. What does it mean to you to be the city's first black mayor?
Well, I'll tell you, I came to the city as a college student at Cal State Dominguez Hills and got an apartment for $900 a month and to be able to come here and get involved, get hired by the city at 26 and spend every day making our city better. You know, when it comes to being the first black mayor, I really reflect on what that means in a city as diverse as Long Beach. So when we say, hey, I want to be a mayor for everyone, I think it means that we now have a mayor who hasn't come from the more established areas of town. You know, we have a mayor from North Long Beach, and we've never had a mayor from North Central West Long Beach. And so this sends a signal that you can have a seat at the table, you can have an opportunity to thrive, and you can see yourself at City Hall.
And by the way, apartments no longer are $900 a month. What are you going to do about that as mayor?
Well, here's the thing. We have tremendous opportunities in our region. Long Beach, you know, was allocated 26,000 units to build here as a part of our 1.3 million units that are needed in Southern California based on the regional housing needs assessment. Well, those 26,000 units, they can be built. We've already zoned through our land use element for space. What we haven't done is identified dedicated sources of revenue to help make sure that those units are actually affordable for working families, the people who live in Long Beach today. And that's the work that the mayor is going to have to take on. The mayor is going to have to bring people together, education leaders, growth sectors, regional bodies, to talk about how we identify more revenue to subsidize the production of housing that's affordable for working people. And as a regional leader, as a mayor, you have that responsibility of bringing additional people together to drive that discussion. And that's what I plan to do.
It seems like there's a disconnect between, you know, not only the mayor of Long Beach, but the mayors of many big cities across this country, where they want big time development in their cities. But a lot of times, most times, almost every time, it's a developer who wants to get as much money as that person can for apartments or condos or whatever they're getting.
Right.
And affordable housing is an afterthought, or it's, you know, 10% of 500 units or whatever it might be. And you will hear housing advocates say, that is not enough. That's not enough to keep up with the pace of income inequality.
And they're right.
How do you tackle that?
Long Beach is big enough. When we get it right, it helps shape the region. But we're also small enough to be creative and test things out and be nimble. And that's what we're going to have to do on housing production. We're going to need to identify, again, revenues that will help us subsidize the gap that's required in order to make housing that's affordable. We used to do this really, really well with redevelopment. This was the program in the state of California that allowed communities with blight to keep a portion of their tax growth and reinvest in those communities. And 20% of every dollar had to go into affordable housing production and preservation. That ended in 2013 in California. That was our biggest tool that communities had to produce housing. So mayors will need to work together to restore dedicated funding. I have a proposal called the Long Beach Housing Promise that partners with educational institutions and growth sectors like hospitals and Space Beach, or growing in sort of aerospace sector, to identify ways to utilize, you know, school district property, infrastructure dollars that are set aside for colleges and others, to create mechanisms to partner together on housing production. I also think we need to hold the state accountable, give us the tools as cities to implement the goals that the city sets out. So we have to build housing. We have to address root causes. We have to think about the future.
Well, on the city council, you helped build Long Beach's first municipal shelter with bridge housing. You've since outlined a plan entitled Hope, Housing First, Outreach Pathways, and Expanding Support. So describe, Mr. Mayor-elect, what this strategy entails and how you think it's going to address the crisis.
Absolutely. Well, look, it's going to take leadership, and we need to be honest with people that we're not going to be able to solve and eliminate homelessness, but we can manage it better. Our HOPE plan really thinks comprehensively. It starts with housing, because we have to build more housing in order to address the issues related to homelessness. Outreach is, you know, we have to do more street level outreach. But when you spend that time and build that trust and someone says, I'm ready to come off the street, we tell them, great, 3 weeks until the next, you know, shelter bed is available. That doesn't work. It has to be integrated with housing and shelter. And then P is for pathways. I'll tell you, you know, my family has resources, and, you know, my little brother, you know, he's someone who's dealt with mental health issues and homelessness. And even for my family, it's difficult to navigate. Imagine the pathway if you don't speak English. Imagine the pathway if you already are dealing with, you're a single mom dealing with putting food on the table. We have to make it easy to simply get people to the support that they need. And that has to happen locally. Local governments are the front door on these services. If you have to go through and navigate a complex legislative and bureaucratic environment, that becomes a part of the problem. And the last part is expanding support and services. We have to do the hard work of sort of going out and do the outreach, but we also have to look internally at how our systems have failed people and how we need to think more comprehensively about delivering services.
Let me ask you about crime. A recent Cal State Long Beach survey shows that there's this perception that crime is a problem in Long Beach. And at the same time, we're also in the midst of a national reckoning over policing. What is your perspective on crime and law enforcement in Long Beach, and what alternatives to policing is the city exploring?
What I'll tell you is Long Beach, prior to the pandemic, announced 40-year lows in violent crime and homicides prior to the pandemic. When the pandemic happened, crime spiked in every major city in America. The impact of that pandemic is going to take some time to normalize. We also have to acknowledge that, you know, I represent a community that says they don't tell me I want fewer police. What they say is when I have an emergency and I call 911, I want that firefighter, that paramedic, that police officer to respond in a timely manner. And we want them to be from our local communities and respect our local communities. We have to think comprehensively. When people define safety, they want their parks active. They want their business corridors well lit. They want opportunities for their youth. They want to have access to clinics in their community and public health. All of those things create a healthy community. That's the outcome that we're looking for, a generally healthy city.
Healthy also has something to do with pollution.
That's right.
And whether a city is polluted. Long Beach is home to one of the busiest ports in the country, second only to your next-door neighbors, the Port of Los Angeles. With that many incoming goods comes a lot of pollution. I mean, how can y'all address the effects of port pollution in Long Beach?
The most significant drivers of poor air quality are, you know, diesel trucks. And we're at a place where, you know, the state government, the federal government, you know, need to do more to ensure that we are subsidizing the conversion of diesel to zero emission vehicles. We need to do more and implement the clean truck rate, because, you know, if there's 6,000 trucks going in and out of the port every day and 24,000 across the region, then, you know, you have to assume about $150K per truck is the subsidy needed to transfer over. You do the math. It's a big number. So this clean truck rate, which has recently been implemented, helps establish a fund to subsidize the conversion of those trucks. It won't do it all, but it's an important first step.
You've said that there should be a covenant, that's your word, with every resident, that no one shall be denied opportunities because of their race or where they live.
That's right.
What will it take to ensure this covenant going forward?
Well, I think it just comes down to values and standards. You know, Long Beach is a big city with tremendous opportunities. We've got a port. We've got one of the fastest growing space clusters in America. But we also have to acknowledge that there is great need, that we have a difference in life expectancy, poor air quality standards, a lack of open space, a whole host of things that need to be addressed here in our communities to make sure that everyone has an opportunity. And it's not the responsibility of a single individual, whether it's a council person or a school board member, to address the deep inequality that's been in place for 50 or 60 years. It's incumbent on the system itself. The city is an institution. So if the city establishes a covenant that says no matter what zip code you live in, you should have access to parks, you should have access to transit, you should have access to job opportunities, that is a good thing. So that's a good thing. And that's something that we should all stand up and protect and defend, no matter what zip code you come from, whether you're with no matter your documentation status, no matter who you love or how you pray. The city should provide a covenant with these basic standards. And that, in my opinion, is leading with people in mind, leading with a lens of equity. And that's what we plan to do.
Incoming Long Beach Mayor Rex Richardson, congratulations to you, sir. And good luck to you on your tenure as mayor. We do appreciate you coming on. I know you got a lot on your list.
Thanks a lot.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, more on the perfume business in L.A., changing the whole industry. You're going to hear about that on Greater L.A. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your time and ears tonight. Have a great night.